Abortion rallies across the country, including right here in Charlotte, getting heated today. From St. Louis to St. Petersburg, hundreds of abortion rights advocates protesting to stop the bans that have been passed in multiple states.
Go, oh, hey, hey, Roe v. Wade is here to stay.
Roe v. Wade has stood for nearly half a century. Now, the landmark abortion rights decision is facing its most serious challenge in decades.
Abortion on demand, without apology. Abortion on demand, without apology.
I had my abortion at over 24 weeks. And so my daughter would be alive today. She would be 20 years old. It was a permanent solution to a temporary problem. But it wasn't a solution at all, because it has caused me grief, depression, anxiety. Words cannot explain the trauma that my abortion has caused me.
45-50% of these babies will survive the induction process. There are babies that are born alive and then left to just die from exposure, you know, without medical treatment. And that's why there's a push to try to get legislation that they can't do that, that they can't just let that baby die, that they have to treat that baby. If that baby survives an abortion, they should be treated the way that you would treat any other baby at that same gestational age.
There is no easy out for a man or a woman who says, well, I just don't think I'm ready to become a father, or I don't think I'm ready to be a mom. What I say to them is, well, you already are a father and you already are a mother. The question you have to ask yourself now is that do you want to be the father of a living child or a not living child?
Over 63 million babies have been killed since Roe v. Wade was declared law nearly 50 years ago. But those in the pro-life movement are fighting back. Organizations are rallying to assist mothers in need. And a major breakthrough may be on the horizon. The U.S. Supreme Court is poised to rule on Dobbs' late-term abortion case, ending it after 15 weeks. Those who have experienced the horrors of abortion are raising their voices. You'll hear some of these voices on The Faces of Roe, a Life Issues radio special with your host, Brad Mattis.
The Faces of Roe pulls back the curtain on so-called choice and shares the personal tragic stories of those victimized by the abortion industry. Their voices speak against the lie that abortion is health care and reveal the devastating realities of abortion. It's time to end the killing of innocent lives. It's time to stand up for women and their unborn babies. It's time to end abortion. Irene Zamorano Arciachi is a mother of six and a strong voice for the pro-life movement, precisely because she lived the horrors of abortion, thinking it was the only way out of a crisis situation. Irene was pregnant, separated from her husband, and desperate for help. She turned to the place she thought was supposed to assist women in need. They recommended abortion, even though she was 24 and a half weeks pregnant, beyond her state legal requirements. Irene, take our listeners through the abortion experience.
When I walked in that clinic, I was an absolute mess. I was confused. I was crying. In line to sign in, I was crying and I was distraught. I immediately felt like I was part of a herd with a dollar sign on my face and a number on my back. And I say this because nobody reached out and nobody cared that I was so distraught. I couldn't even engage in simple conversation. I had my head down. I was continuously wiping my tears. I signed in. They told me to sit down. I would be called in the back. And I'm thinking that I'm going to get an ultrasound at this time, because that's what the clinic told me before. I was going to get an ultrasound because they thought I had already exceeded the limit that clinic did, which was 24 weeks. When they called me back, they gave me a gown and they did say, is anyone outside forcing you to do this? And I said, no. And that was pretty much the only thing that they asked me. They had me sign some paperwork and then they took me in the next room to put on a gown. The lady that gave me the gown said that I was going to go in the next room, take my vitals so I could begin the process of having an abortion. So I changed and I remember there's a lot of noise in my head. Like, what am I doing? What's going on? But at the same time, another part saying, this is the only way. This is the only option. You must do this to protect your other children. It was very conflicting. And so I went to the next room, and in there they had a TV on, and there was a bunch of women in there, and some were talking, some were silent. And I was just there holding my stomach, crying, trying not to be loud, putting my head down and just basically sobbing. Then one of the clinic workers called my name, and I went to another room. It was in that room where they laid me down on a narrow gurney, and she looked in my eyes and she said, is this your first abortion? You have so much fear in your eyes. And I said, yes, it is. And she called the abortionist over there. She goes, come here, look at her. Look at how much fear she has in her eyes. And the abortionist stood over me and she goes, oh, honey, don't worry. This is not a big deal. This is no big deal at all. It'll be over very quick. And that was the biggest lie I've ever heard in my life. Don't worry, it's not a big deal. And then the abortionist gave me a shot into my abdomen. And at that time, my daughter, like, instantly started kicking and punching and twisting. And it was like I was slapped in the face. It was like, oh my gosh, like reality hit me. Like, what are you doing? Like, my daughter's fighting for her life. And it was almost like I woke up out of a nightmare or something. I was still in the nightmare, of course, but I was like, a light bulb went off. Like, I'm killing my own daughter.
63 million babies have been killed by abortion since Roe v. Wade was declared law nearly 50 years ago. But Roe is living on borrowed time, and we in the pro-life movement are fighting back. State legislators are protecting women and their babies from late-term abortion. Yes, the tide is turning, and we need your help. Your gift of $50 right now will help end 50 years of this abortion holocaust. Go to facesofroe.com right now. Take a stand for life. Let's bring the horror of 50 years of legalized killing to an end. At facesofroe.com, you'll discover powerful resources from Life Issues Institute to help you save the babies. And there, you can take a stand for life. Help end 50 years of killing with your gift of $50 today. Stand up and speak up for the unborn. Go to facesofroe.com now.
Dr. Kathy Altman is a retired OBGYN and passionate pro-life advocate. During her residency program, Dr. Altman learned to do abortions, a procedure all OBGYN doctors are required to perform unless they opt out for reasons of conscience. She chose not to, appreciating instead the sense of accomplishment and challenge the abortion procedure provided, a feeling she deeply regrets today. Dr. Altman, tell us a little bit about your experience doing late-term abortions.
There are basically two ways that late-term abortions are done. The one method I use, the DNE procedure or dismemberment procedure. The other is called an induction or medical abortion. And it's basically the same techniques, same medications that are used to induce labor if the woman has a medical problem and has to deliver early. The only difference is that the goal is a dead baby. And so they normally have to inject the baby with something to kill the baby, either into the fluid or into the baby directly, because at least 45-50% of these babies will survive the induction process. And then the abortionist is stuck with the dreaded complication of a live baby. However, there are babies that are still born alive, and that's controversial. People say, oh, that doesn't happen, but it does happen. There are babies that are born alive and then left to just die from exposure, you know, without medical treatment. And that's why there's a push to try to get legislation that they can't do that, that they can't just let that baby die. They have to treat that baby. If that baby survives an abortion, they should be treated the way that you would treat any other baby at that same gestational age.
And we're talking approximately half of the babies survive these late-term abortions if they're not given something to kill them?
If they're not given something to kill them. right.
Irene, would things be different for you had the Mississippi legislation ending abortion at 15 weeks been in effect in California?
Oh, absolutely. My daughter would be alive today. I had my abortion at over 24 weeks. And so my daughter would be alive today. She would be 20 years old if that law was in place in California at that time.
Did you have the feeling that because it's legal, it's okay?
Yes, I did. That was my go-to at the time when I was confused and distraught was, well, it's legal. And I also believed the lie of all I heard at the abortion clinic, they treat it like they're handing out candy or something, like, or maybe taking your blood pressure. They treat it so like it's not a big deal. Everybody does it. You know, it's a quick process. You won't think about it after. That's the lie that I bought.
Dr. Altman, why do you think women wait so long to have an abortion that would be a late term abortion?
Basically, there were delays. They oftentimes knew that they were pregnant by 8 weeks, but for one reason or another, they delayed. There's extreme pressure put on women to abort. We have sold our young women a lie. We have told them that they can't make it in life. They can't do as well as men unless they have access to abortion. And that's really a lie. And we have denigrated motherhood. And instead of pouring our resources into things that support families and women and children, we have said, well, you have abortion, just have an abortion. And that's really been our society's cop-out.
How has your role in abortion impacted you personally?
It was a terrible shock to suddenly realize I was a mass murderer. And it took a lot of prayer and counseling to help me get past that. Thankfully, we have a very gracious God who forgives. And I know I'm forgiven.
Irene, did your husband support the abortion at the time?
He did not verbally, but he did so indirectly by putting me in the situation that caused me to seek an abortion to begin with. And I take full responsibility. But when I'm hearing the biological father threatening and telling me this, and then I'm hearing something from the other side, I was put in between a rock and a hard place. And that's what led me to seek the abortion to begin with.
What you say kind of fits. 60-70% of women who have had an abortion talk about the pressure and coercion they faced while making that decision.
I never realized what led women to the abortion clinic. It's because they are in a crisis situation. I don't think anybody really wants to go to the abortion clinic because they want to have an abortion. They mm-hmm. they go because as a last resort. They go because they don't think they have any other options. They go because they think it's a quick fix that's going to solve their problems. But it doesn't. And so my mother took me to a local labor and delivery hospital. And it was there where they hooked me up to the monitor. And initially the doctor was optimistic. And he said that the baby has a strong heartbeat. Everything was probably going to be okay. He needs to consult a specialist. About an hour or so later, he came in. And he said that the specialist that he talked to said that they injected me with a chemical that would eventually stop my daughter's heart. And there was basically nothing that they could do at that point. And so he encouraged me to go back to the abortion clinic because it was easier to finish the process, which later now I know it was easier to tear her out piece by piece than it was to have her whole. And so I told him there was no way I could go back there after my experience there. So I went home just talking to my daughter in tears, distraught, telling her I was so sorry, praying. And I came back to the hospital the next day, the labor and delivery department, and they hooked me up to the monitor. And sure enough, there was no heartbeat. So they gave me the medicine to induce me. And they warned me, they did talk to me and they said, you know, your daughter might, because I was 24 weeks, a little over 24 weeks, that they said my daughter might not come out whole or looking like a newborn baby. Her skin might be a little bit transparent, or maybe they thought it would be possible for a limb to break off. And so they prepared me for that. And so I was trying to prepare for whatever was going to happen. But after 7 hours of labor and after me pushing, my daughter came out, and she was absolutely beautiful. And she looked just like a newborn baby. So she was identical to a newborn baby, but just much smaller, a little bigger than my hand. And when she was delivered, they put her on my chest, like they knew they do newborn babies. So I was able to hold her, and we did like skin to skin. And so I gave her a kiss goodbye, and the nurse walked in, and she got her from me and walked her lifeless, cold body out of the hospital room. And that was probably the most hardest thing I've ever experienced.
63 million babies have been killed by abortion since Roe v. Wade was declared law nearly 50 years ago. But Roe is living on borrowed time, and we in the pro-life movement are fighting back. State legislators are protecting women and their babies from late-term abortion. Yes, the tide is turning, and we need your help. Your gift of $50 right now will help end 50 years of this abortion holocaust. Go to facesofroe.com right now. Take a stand for life. Let's bring the horror of 50 years of legalized killing to an end. At facesofroe.com, you'll discover powerful resources from Life Issues Institute to help you save the babies. And there, you can take a stand for life. Help end 50 years of killing with your gift of $50 today. Stand up and speak up for the unborn. Go to facesofroe.com now.
Elliot Cohn's life was turned upside down when he received a call from a past girlfriend who had disappeared one day out of the blue. She shared a heart-wrenching story, revealing that she was forced to abort Elliot's son years before. Elliot, shocked and dismayed, wrestled with the trauma of losing a son he didn't know he had. He describes the unthinkable acts that led to this forced abortion.
After being held hostage in her family home, at this point she was nearly 6 months pregnant. Her father came out of his office, drunk as a skunk, with a gun in his hand. And he pointed the gun at her and said, "It's either one of you or both of you. We're not having that abomination in this family." And he then grabbed my ex-girlfriend by the arm, literally at gunpoint, and dragged her to the car, shoved her in the car, drove her to an abortionist who was willing to do the procedure. And he forced her to abort right at about 6 months.
What impact did that abortion have on the mother of your child?
It was absolutely devastating. She was just dealing with all kinds of grief about this. So much grief and so much guilt, which she shouldn't have felt guilty, but so much guilt that she actually had tried to commit suicide twice. When you know that your child has been, you know, killed, and there was absolutely nothing that you can do or say about it, that would have changed the outcome, or that could have changed the outcome, it just really left me with a feeling of intense helplessness. And I would have like night terrors and things like that. And our society's just been programmed to believe that this is not an issue that men should have an opinion on or even have feelings about. That's just not true. I mean, this is an issue that affects the entire family. It's a human rights issue. It's actually a human rights crisis, because we're up way over 60 million abortions since Roe v. Wade. And that's not counting the chemical abortion.
Cheney Mullins Gooley is a proud pro-life advocate and the provider support manager for her plan, the Pregnancy and Life Assistance Network. Her life passion is seeing families and relationships thrive, and she absolutely loves being part of anything and everything that can help support women and families. Crucial work if the Supreme Court significantly impacts the abortion landscape. Cheney, pro-abortion advocates often claim that women who lack access to abortion will be abandoned and left without care. How do you respond to that?
The pro-life movement's heart is to be there for women, not just at the moment of a pregnancy decision, but ongoing as she gives birth and learns to parent or make an adoption plan for her child. We're there even if she struggles and needs short-term care or the foster care system. We want to be there with medical care, with transportation and social needs. We care about childcare. We care that her little baby has a pediatrician to make sure that child is thriving and healthy, and we're not contributing to the infant mortality rate. And her plan is really meant to be a more accurate portrayal of all that care and all those services that already exist to try to help women and families. We're here, but we're just not coordinated and collaborating. And that's what her plan is here for. We don't have to do the direct services ourselves. We're here to support those that do the direct services and connect them to each other. I think that her plan also gives pro-lifers an opportunity to find new ways to plug into the movement and to really pursue their calling and to move into a post-Roe America with greater confidence. Because as we're looking at the possibility of a post-Roe world, we need to be looking at what happens to those additional women and children who are then looking at other options besides abortion. And are we ready to serve and to care and to love them and to meet their needs? And we've seen very much in Texas the swarm of women that are now going to pregnancy centers needing help. And so entirely as a movement, we have got to step up. We have got to meet the demand, and we are willing to do that. And it is so exciting to see every day the momentum building for growing the safety net and for learning about what these women are facing and making sure that the services that can help them are more and more accessible and of higher and higher quality.
Elliot, if you could speak to the Supreme Court justices as they contemplate the Dobbs late-term abortion case in Mississippi, what would you tell them based upon your own personal experience?
I would ask them to put themselves in the position of a parent. The first question I would ask them is, do you have children? And if they did have children, I would say, okay, now how would you feel if somebody came up to you and they said, hey, we're just going to take your child over here in this other room and we're going to kill them. And you just need to stay here and be okay with it. What makes it any different when the child is pre-born?
Irene, if you could speak to the Supreme Court justices concerning the Dobbs late-term abortion case, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that women need help. Why don't they tell us that women don't know? The negative impacts of abortion are not revealed to women because they're sold a lie that it's a quick fix, and it's not. It was a permanent solution to a temporary problem, but it wasn't a solution at all because it has caused me grief, depression, anxiety. Words cannot explain the trauma that my abortion has caused me. And in America, over 60 million lives have been lost to abortion and countless generations. It's mind-blowing. It's hard to even comprehend. My daughter, Lenore, would have had children. My other six daughters, they have children. I'm going to have great-grandchildren. But I have completely annihilated a whole generation line from the decision I made when I was in a crisis situation. Help women. Don't just throw them to the abortion industry.
The stories speak for themselves. Abortion is not the safe, healthy, and empowering choice advertised by the abortion industry. We must continue to fight harder than ever to stop this tragedy, starting with common sense laws that end late-term abortion, like the one currently before the Supreme Court. Now is the time. Join the movement that provides care for mothers and fathers in need, protects innocent lives, and exists to see life thrive. We can do this.
When you visit facesofroe.com, you'll be able to show your tangible support for unborn babies and their mothers. And you'll find a wealth of information and resources to make a real difference. You'll also find ways you can get involved to help end Roe v. Wade. Again, visit facesofroe.com for these great resources. Thanks again for listening to The Faces of Roe from Life Issues Institute, where we help you stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.